It's Wednesday, November 25th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 171 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 12 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Chad.
This is Wayne.
My name is Pat.
I'm Mikey.
And this is John.
And now I'm asleep after all those introductions. Man, how many people we got here?
Yeah, this is the six-way mic bang. I don't know if we've had this in a year, well, maybe longer.
I'm assuming our fans should know who everyone here is, except perhaps Mikey. So to clarify, that is Mikey Mason, who is the comedian at Fear the Con 2, will be joining us again at Fear the Con 3, and you can find his stuff at MikeyMason.com.
Yes.
But he's also a gamer, and so he decided to come in town, break bread with us, and we are having him guest on the show, and John's back up here for Thanksgiving break. So we have a pretty full house. We're Chrisless, but that's why the quality's going to remain up for
no
the show.
No Olsen twins, but hey.
Well, there was only one at any one time on Full House, so it wasn't as full as it could have
been.
That's
true.
There's a couple of people listening to the show that may have received an unexpected and generally unprecedented present. That's an email reply from me.
No. I don't believe it.
Well,
I don't believe it.
It's like Santa writing back. It doesn't happen.
When are we going to get an email reply from you, Dan? Yeah.
Well, what I did was I went into my Fear the Boot email account, went through early November, not the top of November, early November, and answered all those emails up until today. Now, looking back beyond that, I have about 3,000 unread messages. I'm just telling you right now, it's not going to happen.
So it is like writing to Santa.
Yeah, I want to get back into the swing of responding to my email. So if you send an email to dan@feartheboot.com, I am going to start answering those emails from this day forward.
But
if you did not get a response, that's in one of those 3,000 unread messages, it's not going to get responded to.
And next thing you know, you're going to kick your heroin addiction like you've been telling us. And
and if you send an email to any of the rest of us, we've already been responding, so nothing new there.
Yeah.
Well, except Chad, which really wasn't your fault, but we had some problems with domain keys and such that was keeping the emails from forwarding to his Google account that he's using to reply from. So
I'm getting them now.
That's been fixed as well. Yeah. So all kinds of new fun.
In fact, I just got an email a few minutes ago, literally a few minutes ago, bitching about how this guy's been trying to get in contact with you. And you haven't responded to your email. So he's given up, and now he's contacting
me. Well, it's funny that he's given up, because now it just became possible again.
Yes.
And he gave up.
They say that to rescuer trainers. As soon as they see you going into the water, they'll give up and sink.
Yeah.
So that happens.
Yeah, or drag you down with them. So, Fear the Con 3, I want to let you guys know that there's something we did at Fear the Con 1, did not do at Fear the Con 2, but it is coming back for Fear the Con 3.
The hell is that?
Fear the Fruit.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
In the interest of,
and by that, we don't mean Fear Chad.
No.
No, we mean Fear Chad, but
but not for this topic.
Right. In the interest of promoting health among gamers, at Fear the Con 1, we had a gentleman who brought in a large amount of fruit that he had purchased with his, donations that he had collected. It had nothing to do with us, but he brought in a large amount of fruit that he was offering as free snacks to the gaming tables in the interest of promoting health. We are going to bring that again this year, and here's how it's going to work. And I'll link this in the show notes so you can check this out if whenever you get a chance. But Zeke Copper Eyes, one of our treasured Toft bitches, trusted friend.
And also the president of Vice.
The president of Vice, the trusted friend of the show, he is going to be taking the donations, and he is going to take care of buying bulk amounts of fruit. So if you want to donate to this, he's going to set up a PayPal account you can give to. As far as I understand, 100% of the money will be used to buy the fruit, bring it down here, or buy it down here. And just like in previous years, or just like in Fear the Con 1, any leftover food from that will be donated to a local charity, probably the women's shelter we gave it to before. So even if you don't eat any of this, this is still a great cause to give to. So check the show notes for information on how to donate to that. I've already pledged. I'm putting money into this. As soon as I post the show notes, I will seed this with some amount of money. But
I'm excited about this because like half the cast here is on a diet. So it's very timely.
I'm not, but I like pooping. So
I was on a fatten up diet until I got my butt tube and I couldn't lift anymore, but that's a whole other story.
Butt tube.
You were saying, Dan?
Yeah. For anyone that's wondering, he explained that to me and you really don't want to know.
It's gone now. Everything's cool again.
But he really likes the doctor.
No, John, I'll have you know, I wasn't wondering at all. I don't know. I actually and do really I don't like want that to doctor. Know.
He shaved my ass. It's incredibly intimate. He's like, man, it's really going to hurt if you don't shave your ass right now. And I was like, go at it, buddy.
And the doctor did. You know, that's the personal touch. Usually they have a medical assistant do that.
Well, the nurse did it the first time. But okay. This is a multiple visit butt affair.
Right. So he's intimately familiar with
If you learn the name of your nearest proctology guy, or I don't even remember what it was called, but you're going multiple times.
Yeah.
So, awkward for the
silence.
What else is good for your colon? Pears.
That is one thing I'm hoping this year. I don't know what Zeke has planned, but that's one thing I'm hoping is in the first year, I think we only had like apples and bananas.
Well, no, we had apples, bananas, and oranges.
Oranges, okay.
But you have to remember, like, stuff like pears are very perishable, easily bruised.
Perishable.
Yes. They're easily bruised, that sort of thing. So...
Yeah, we do have to tell Zeke about the Soulard Market. Like,
yes,
if he goes down to Deerberg's, he's going to get a quarter of what he should get.
Zeke and I are already working. Okay. Christian and I are already
Christian's
working.
His real name for anyone who's not fond. Zeke is just his form handle.
Although Zeke Copper Eyes, really cool name. I think it's the name of one of his characters in a role-playing game.
It elicits images of zombies ate my neighbors to me.
Really?
So I've met Christian probably 5 times. I know exactly what he looks like, what he sounds like. But when I think of Zeke Copper Eyes, I think of a kid with spiky Calvin hair and 3D glasses.
When I think of Zeke Copper Eyes, I think of, like, this kid with snake eyes, copper snake eyes, and a kilt that is on fire.
Spiky hair and 3D glasses. John, two images came to mind. One was of Aurum.
Yes, because
the costume he was in was of Zeke from Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
And the friend he brought with him was dressed up as
Julia
from Zombies.
So I just didn't catch reference. The other image it brought to mind was Back to the Future 2.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because there was one of the guys in the future.
In the 80s cafe. Yeah.
In the
Griff's little band.
Future of, what was it, 2010 or 2015?
Yeah, we're coming up right
on. The far distant future of 2015.
There was my flying car.
Where I'm going,
there's my self-adjusting, self-drying jacket. Yeah.
Actually, which would you rather have? Of all the technologies that they had in the
anything
future, which
Back
would you
to the
rather
future
have?
Too.
Yeah,
Reagan.
But any
probably
thing.
The damn time machine.
Well, that was not a future technology. That was a present day technology.
Okay.
So, of 2015 technology from Back to the Future, you only have one. What would it be?
Well, since Dan has said the word, I would take a Max Headroom Ronald Reagan and it could occupy all my digital media and tell me things.
And give you Pepsi.
Yeah,
I would take Marty's mom.
Rhea Perlman in her 2015 makeup?
No, Leah Thomas with boobs.
Nice. I think I would have to go with flying skateboards. The flying cars and stuff.
The hoverboards don't work on water.
They don't. Unless you have power. And I'm not even a skater or anything like that, but I would become one.
You would,
I want the Mr. Fusion.
Mr. Fusion would be very practical. See, I would go with Mr. Fusion. But it's so practical and so useful, it's boring. So I couldn't go with
based on today's events, I would go with the meteorologist who can actually tell you when it's going to stop raining.
Yeah, that would have been nice. The minute, to the second. Yeah.
Didn't they allude to some sort of like climate control thing that they were running?
I don't know.
It's been a long time.
That's
since
a
I've
really
seen
fine
too,
grained
did,
thing
yeah.
that would get like a one line mention. I'd have to really watch the movie and watch for that to tell. I like the hologram, too. The hologram is so crappy. Yes.
For Jaws 20.
For Jaws, The Cubs winning the World Series has not happened yet. They made the movie in 1985. They would have been on a, let's do the math, 78-year losing streak at that point, I believe. So they're coming up on that.
Nice.
Sorry, Cubs fans, but they blow.
So changing to role-playing games.
Shut
there's
up.
A topic brought up on the forums that I think... There's some risk factor here, but I think there's also some reward factor.
Is it a role-playing game about the game of Risk?
Yeah. Because
that seems either really dumb or really cool.
Yeah, you pretend to be a little wooden cube.
Or you pretend to be Napoleon.
No, no, goodness,
or,
no. No.
Or Wellington.
You pretend to be a little wooden cube.
What's my motivation?
Your character's a little wooden.
Your character's a little wooden, buddy.
It's a little stiff.
You got to think outside the box if you really want to come up with somebody's. But anyways, the topic is going back to old campaigns. Let's say you've had this campaign you played years ago. Great characters, great plot. Maybe played it to completion or satisfying end, maybe didn't. And at some point years later, you decide, you know what? Let's dust this stuff off and bring it back. Not replay it, but let's play the next chapter of their lives. Let's carry on with it. You may not even have the same people in the gaming group. You might have some same people, some turnover. Could be the exact same people. Who knows? But like, we're presuming you have at least some carryover, because otherwise it might as well be a new campaign for a different group.
Or you move to college and you're running an old campaign for a new group of PCs who doesn't know any better, and you're telling them it's new. Like a D-bag. D-me. But we're not talking about that, are we?
Well, I think the recycled campaign for new people is an essential tool in the GM toolkit.
Well, I've long espoused, I mean, certainly creativity is best, but I've long espoused it's human nature. You're going to run out of ideas eventually. And so.
And refinement breeds perfection. Yeah, I mean, right. Mikey, how many times have you run a comedy show that's come out of nowhere that you've never done any of it before? First time you did it once?
First time, yeah.
See, there maybe. You go.
But no, I agree that if you're going back and rerunning it, you're going to make changes, and hopefully those changes are improvements.
Yeah, if it's something you wanted to share with a group once, you're going to want to share it with another group when you have a new group.
Especially if it worked.
Yeah.
Well, I think the same thing is also true for the players. I've had players complain to me, I've run out of good character ideas. One of my recommendations is, okay, if you're just having absolute writer's block, I think most people are more creative than they think they are, but if you're having absolute writer's block, there's nothing in the TV series you're watching or books you're reading that inspires you, recycle an old character. Grab a guy who you really enjoyed playing, readjust him for this campaign, this setting, run him again.
But don't be Ninja Kid. Because Ninja Kid doesn't know he's out of ideas. He thinks he's got a whole load of them.
I think you
No. What you don't understand is that this ninja has plus 3 psi.
See, I think that you really run the risk of creating a monster there. And it's a good idea. And I don't have a problem with it, but you do run the risk of creating, instead of I don't have an idea guy, to I'm going to play the same character every freaking game guy.
We all typecast ourselves.
Yeah. And I think people go in cycles on that. But, you know, as a GM, like I said, it's not a bad thing.
One time doesn't make a rut, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that you can just kind of, as a GM, you should maybe keep an eye on that.
But that's not exactly the topic that was brought up. Let me give you an example of where this actually happened in the gaming history of Chad and I. Nobody else here was in my gaming group.
Nor will I remember, so go.
You might remember this. When we first started playing Battletech, we were playing a mercenary corps. Because, of course, one of the first decisions you got to make...
that's all you ever play.
Well, no, actually, we had some great games as other groups. But for our first game, we took the most popular choice and decided...
Yeah, it's boring getting cut off from command every single week when you're a regular army guy that has to go on an adventure.
Hey, shut up. Those were good games.
No, the games you ran as Silver Scorpions were great because we were a mercenary corps.
Yeah.
But we played a mercenary corps, and Tex was running it. Well, I was running the game, but Tex was running the mercenary corps. He was the commanding officer. Kevin was the quartermaster, and they're everybody kind of had their own little niche, did a little stuff. I think Chad was in charge of the vehicle group or something like that. And it wasn't a huge mercenary corps, but we played this game.
But it had a lot of heart.
We played this game for years. Now, admittedly, this was not our first game, this was one of our early games, probably wasn't the best, probably wasn't the most mature, I guarantee wasn't the most mature, but nonetheless, we had a lot of fun with it. And this campaign went on for years. Best estimate I can give you is probably 3 to 5 years. It went in a long time. We got distracted by some other games. Ended up, our gaming group changed. Some people left. Some people came in.
You mean we played other games other than Battletech?
We did, believe it or not.
Wow, I don't, because that's what everyone tells me. I only play Battletech.
We only play Battletech. But we went over and started playing with a different group of friends. Mm-hmm. And we started doing a lot more role-playing and a lot less dice-playing. And
so you played Bartletech.
Yes. And very well-balanced, diverse, fits well within its role, you know.
So spread across the multiple roles that it purports to perform that it actually can perform none of them.
It actually succeeds with some degree in all of them. But also during this time, Tex had gone off to college. So the guy that was, you know, kind of heading it up, he left. We played a bunch of other games, stopped playing Battletech, but we talked about these old stories, the fun times we had, and the group had not completely turned over, so there are a lot of people in there still remembered the fun times we had. So Tex comes back from college for a summer or something like that, and we come with the idea, you know what? Let's go back. Let's revisit this campaign. And the way we chose to run it was we said, we are going to say that, look, that much time has passed in their world as well. A couple years have gone by. The mercenary corps kind of fallen on hard times, fallen into disrepair. Several years have advanced. Some people have left. Some people have come in. Some of the NPCs are dead. There's some new NPCs in there. And let's pick up the game again with basically this group trying to pull itself back together and tell a new story. And the campaign did not last several years. The campaign only lasted a couple months. I think it fizzled out. But even then, the end I had in mind was not going to be all that way off in the future.
I see two dangers with that, Dan.
I see back strain and possible wrist injury. Those are the dangers I see.
No, we're talking about gaming.
Huh?
But in this case, it worked out really well. Now, I certainly see some dangers, and I certainly see some things you ought to watch.
I love it. I mean, I love it when you guys say that certain concepts in role-playing game are dangerous. I mean, I get what you're saying.
But
within the context and framework of what
you
you're saying...
You might die.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like I said, within the context and framework of what we're talking about, it's dangerous to not name your character and give it a background because it's blah, 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 it's just hack and slash, whatever. But yeah, the way it sounds, like, you're going to die if you do that.
Simply possibly not conducive to a successful game.
Correct.
If you allow that one guy to play a rogue, your mom...
That's right. Well,
news.
I don't go into her personal life.
I got news. That's going to happen anyway.
That's right.
All right. The two big dangers I see in that, Dan, are...
That's a backstab.
Mom...
The two big dangers I see in this are, one, you've got people that weren't part of the campaign, so half of the group has this big impression of, we had all this fun, they remember that, the other guys aren't nearly as invested in, they can get into the game, but they're coming in at a disadvantage, of they don't have the whole history. The other one is partially tied to the first one. You've got these half the guys, they're remembering all this fun they had, they're going to have some pretty high expectations, and as we constantly talk about, when you go back and watch like old things from your childhood and such, nothing is ever as good as you remembered it then when you try to revisit it.
I'll have to agree with Wayne there. I mean, have you ever been the new guy in an old group? Not even in gaming or necessarily.
I've been the new guy in your group.
Yeah, where everybody's sitting around and they're making
with you there, John.
The jokes. Yeah. They're making all the in-jokes and go back and forth, and everyone's real comfortable with each other, and everyone starts, someone says something, everyone starts laughing, you're like, ha, 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 ha. Yeah.
I agree with you. And I think one of the ways we helped avoid this somewhat was the fact that we said...
Discovered beer.
No, this was prior to us discovering beer. But we said, time has passed. So in a sense, we're starting a new story. Yes, there are certainly some carryover characters. There might be some prior events that bear on this. There were some rivalries that would come up again. But because we'd advanced all these years, it's not like the campaign ended on May 20th of 3053. May 21st of 3053. And there was a sense of a break where, yeah, these were new guys coming in, but years had passed, things had changed. There were some things that even the people who had always been there through that campaign had to hear for the first time.
Let me ask you this. I have my answer in my head, but why would you do that then? If you're going to change it to the point where someone can totally walk into this cold and not feel uncomfortable in any way, like they're not getting it.
Right.
Then why do it? Why not just start something totally new?
Well, the plus side is if they aren't getting something, too, neither were their characters. It's a new character coming into a group that had the history. It's not just the player that's missing out in this case. It's the character as well.
Well, I think sometimes...
Wait, I want to hear from Pat. He hasn't said a word.
Well, I was going to ask another question as opposed to falling onto yours, so...
What's your question?
What happened to this campaign? How did it peter out after you've been playing it for a while?
I believe the single biggest answer is that Tex went to college. I think there were some other things.
That's in the first place, or when you once you came back to it, you're saying?
The original campaign, I believe, died off because Tex went off to college. And after
we were 17-year-olds.
Well, and we were 17-year-olds. And after having played BattleTech for so long, we wanted
Wait a minute. You rebooted this 5-year-old campaign when you were 17?
No.
After a pause?
No.
When did it start?
No, hold on. It died.
So elementary school.
Yeah, so you're like 9.
It died sometime.
When we were 17.
When we were maybe 17.
Okay.
It maybe was rebooted a couple years thereafter. Okay.
And it's the reboot. So how did the reboot fizzle out?
I believe the reboot fizzled out because two things happened. One was some things occurred in the plot that really, really derailed the game. That really, and I don't just mean as in, oh, they went someplace that I didn't expect. I mean, there were some very bad GMing mistakes I made that allowed them to put themselves in trouble, paint themselves in some corners, and I did not know how to get them out of them. And as a GM, there are tons of mistakes I made that allowed that to happen, and tons of mistakes I made failing to recover from that. But I think something else that figured in there is because we only had a short amount of time before Tex had to go back, and he had other friends and stuff he was keeping up with. And our other group, we were running multiple gaming groups because this is back when we had the time to do that. We got distracted by shiny new games, and so eventually just wasn't worth the effort to keep it going.
You mean other Battletech?
No, at the time, it was all that homebrew sci-fi stuff.
Tons of homebrew sci-fi stuff.
Well, I know it couldn't have been D&D, because surely Chad wouldn't play D&D.
No, I played D&D before.
Chad, let me answer your question of why continue it. And I think...
Okay, I can answer that.
Okay,
all right, metaphorically, all right. Because I don't know how many of you experienced a one-night stand, but if you've ever had a one-night stand and it was really, really, really good, and I hope everyone here has. But if you've ever had a one-night stand that was really good and then came back later and tried to hook up again, also for just wine, it's never, ever the same. You can't really go back.
Well, you're correct, but that's a separate point. That's not exactly what
you do realize. Like a relationship that had broken up that you come back to.
Well, I say,
and you do realize you're talking with a group of role player. I mean,
yeah,
one night stands,
married,
gaming,
married, group. Married, married.
I am the only single guy. At this time.
So, all right, let me hang on.
Last intimate encounter was a man shaving his ass.
That's actually true.
You know, I would knock that, but that's probably more intimate encounter than any of us married guys had in a while. So.
And you know, I'm only 4 days out, man. It's up until afterglowing.
And when he goes back to the proctologist, it'll probably be about.
I got a 2-week appointment, buddy.
You know, that's something you could never have with a one night stand or seeing her again. You could never make an appointment for that sort
All right,
of thing.
Well, here's you're raising a slightly different point. Let me respond to Chad's point, then respond.
I don't remember this game.
That's why I hold a piece of paper and a pen in front of me. Chad, your question was why continue a game in the first place?
Right.
And the answer is, I think in some cases you may be better off accepting it's over. Mm-hmm. The story's done. You know, one of the things that I was talking to Mikey about is he and I were out running around and showing him the town and stuff this past week.
You guys made such a cute couple, by the way.
Oh, we did. Yeah. Pat
held hands.
Jealous,
I am.
Put my head on his shoulder.
Mm-hmm. I hear he bought you bionic apples.
You got some splaining to do.
I have to explain to Pat why Red Roof Ends on my credit card.
That's right.
I came this close to holding Dan's nuts.
And then my wife and I joined for a 4-way.
Yeah.
Whoa.
But.
What?
As for what you're talking about, you did successfully drill me for a second, but I can't. I got
like,
back.
Push through. Right. I've been doing this for 3 years. Push through.
With Watchmen, one of my questions has always been, at the very end of it, I would love to know what happens to Rorschach's journal.
Yeah.
When it gets put in the newspaper, do people believe it? Does it blow the whole thing wide open? Is it a tabloid story? Is it a conspiracy theory? Does a new group of superheroes and investigators pop up who look into it and find the truth? Now, here's the thing, though. While I would love to sit down with Alan Moore and hear him say...
I hear he is crazy.
Well,
so I don't know if you'd actually want to sit down with him.
This is just theoretical. I would love to sit down with him and hear him just explain to me, this is what would have happened, but there should never be a Watchmen 2.
Well, and here's what I think
the story does not need to be. Well, hang on, let me finish the thought. The story does not.
Pat, you shut up.
I know.
You shut your whore mouth.
You're done running.
You know what? I used up my quota way overboard on one
episode.
Well,
let me just respond to one question.
I'll get back in the box.
But I think there are some times you have to accept, as cool as it was, it's better off just leaving it dead. Mikey, to your point, you can't always go back. You can never recreate those experiences. And I think that should be an attitude coming into this. You're not looking to recreate the experience. You're looking to tell a new story in a new direction that just has some favorite familiar elements.
Here's the thing, though. When you're talking about doing that, we're talking about it like, hey, it's this philosophical thing. Here's how human psychology works. Here's how these groups work. Here's the length of our experience and such, you know, laid out before you, and here's what we find. But that's not how it works. It's like a group of guys gets together and they're drinking beers and they're bowling and they have this big pizza in front of them. They're like, man, you remember that game we had a couple of years ago? That was awesome. And then they're just like, yeah, and they start talking it up, and then they go like, let's do it again, and it's like all high fives. And people don't apply that sort of analysis to it. They just kind of get caught up in the emotion.
No, that's true, but I think that's partially what I'm trying to say with this topic, mm-hmm. is that...
Stop being so emotional.
Well, what I'm saying is that, look, it is. I think it is possible. You can never go back, per se.
You can go into it with the attitude that you're going to take that as a base and make something new. And as long as your goal is to make something new, then you're better off.
You set realistic expectations.
Well, I think the interesting experiment of it, too, is just like what you were saying, is that since these are characters that you played in this instance in your formative period, and you come back to it a few years later with maybe some, you know, more maturity, it can be interesting just to see, this was the character back then and I remember it. How has it changed now? I mean, it's more of a heady experience, I guess. It would be
another example of this in addition to this mercenary campaign. And this is a little bit of a different concept, but it's, I think once again, we made it work. It was one of the best campaigns I ever played in.
The second part or the first part?
I'm changing thoughts completely. I think both parts of this campaign worked, though the second was shorter than the first. But I'm changing thoughts completely.
Whoa.
In that homebrew sci-fi setting that we had, which was none of ours. It was a creation of a guy named Paul.
It's called Legendaries. It was great.
Yeah, it's called Legendaries. It was a great game. And we had a ton of fun playing it. And he had made a universe where you could play anything. Imagine Rifts if it didn't suck. I know that's
does
like
not compute.
Yeah. I know that's like imagine chocolate sans the chocolate, but
here's the whole concept.
I'm a glitter boy. I'm a line walker. Let's run together.
Here's the whole concept of this entire game, the entire universe. The whole concept was you go up to him, the guy who runs Legendary, Paul is his name. And actually, it's Dawn's ex-boyfriend. And you go up to him.
And you steal his girlfriend and you marry
her. Like, bam!
And you say, Legendary, baby!
That's right. Epic fail. So I...
Save against Chad.
save versus Chad at minus two.
Poor Paul. No, Paul's happy. He's got a woman.
Well, on top of that's also not what happened. So
if he doesn't, it doesn't matter.
I have no idea if he does. I've ran into him years later and we talked.
Well, I said that's not what happened. If you want to hear that story, go back to the last bedtime stories. We explain in detail what really did happen. But
I got nothing but love for them.
Right.
So you go up to Paul and you're like, Paul, I'm not understanding what you're saying about this universe, this Legendaries, this game. And remember, we had only come from like Star Trek, a little bit of D&D, Shadowrun, and some Battletech, and it's like very defined. Everything is defined. All the roles are defined. And you're like, well, what can I do? What can I play? And he's like, anything. I'm like, what does that mean? What do you mean? I can play anything. I can play Beethoven? And he's like, yeah, if you want to. It's like, what is it? It's just like, it's generally sci-fi, but there's all kind of magic and he's like, what can I do? What role do I fill? And he's like, no, you don't understand. What do you want to do?
And the basic approach he had taken was that it wasn't a Rifts thing where you had different, dimensions and things.
Yeah.
It was just, it's a big universe. It's out there somewhere.
Yeah, he's got aliens, got ships, and he's got politics, he's got this, and it's all his stuff. And yeah, I want to play blah, 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 and you give him 10 pages of write-ups on aliens and this and that, and it's just like, yeah, sounds great. Shoehorns it into the universe. The idea is that the universe is infinite. You can shoehorn anything in
right.
there.
So over the years, though, we had played many campaigns in the setting, and we had all played this wide variety of characters. And so one day we decide, we ought to have something that we in our – this is a great name. We were up all night on this one. We decided to call our All-Stars game, where what each of us was going to do – and it was four of us. It was me, Chad, Tim, and Paul.
Mm-hmm.
What each of us was going to do was we were going
to – And Dawn. Dawn, too.
Was Dawn in as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dawn was in her. Meal.
I didn't. All right. I don't remember. Point being, though.
Yeah.
Each of us basically said what we're going to do.
Let's talk about more stuff that no one has any clue what we're talking about.
Well, that's
about.
What I'm trying to get to the point here. Each of us picked out the favorite character we had ever played in any role-playing game and adapted them into Legendaries, because you can fit anything into this universe, mm-hmm. and put them in a party together. And here we went on continuing, or in some cases rebooting, but nonetheless telling again the story of these characters together on a new plot line. And here was a chance once again to relive, to re-enjoy these past experiences, but at the same time accepting you can never go back. I can't take you back to your childhood. I can't. Yeah. I cannot recreate this game, but we can still tell a great story that involves many of these elements as long as you come in with the right expectations.
Well, and the expectations were set of this is going to be mature, it's going to be serious, it's going to be interesting. And you can take characters from, I mean, you remember those old games that you played when you were a teenager where it's like, I am gun guy. What's your name?
Indiana Elf. Oh, I have a whip because it's in the player's manual.
And what if you took that character that you loved playing but was ridiculous and matured it and just said, okay, how can I make this not crap?
I'm going to turn the Caped Crusader into the Dark Knight.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what we did. And that worked out really well. It was interesting.
All right, so the main topic we want to talk about today.
So our topic before was just how awesome our games were in the past and how awesome we
no,
are.
No,
revisiting past
games. Yeah, topic was revisiting past games. So I said, I think it's something you can do. I think you need to set some expectations of what this can and cannot do.
And keep an eye out for the new players that are joining that don't have the history with the campaign.
Know what? Actually, that's probably a point that bears some emphasis, which is if you have some new guys who don't know all the in-jokes, who don't know all the past events, be sure to put enough new stuff in there so that everyone's equally lost.
And
enough explanations so that the new players don't feel totally left out.
I would even say cut some of the in
out.
There. Yeah, cut some of the in out.
Maybe even revisit a brand new group template to make sure the new guy's not a third wheel or a fifth wheel or whatever, but he's a real part of the team.
Nothing is worse than sitting in on a game where everybody else is doing stuff and in the know, and you're just like,
I have no idea. Yeah, and I can't possibly catch up on 5 years of history from your campaign. There's a topic I want to cover today.
It's why Mikey Mason knows so much about good beer.
No, that's not it at all. Though, Mikey, I guess we should throw on a plug for this. You do a beer podcast. If anyone
I'm part of one. I don't do it. I'm on the cast.
All right. Well, you're at least a rotating host on the cast.
Yes.
But if anyone's interested in hearing his podcast that is all about beer, because while he's been down here, St. Louis, for obvious reasons, is a big beer town.
It is.
We have major breweries, there are tons of microbrews, and he has been giving us all kinds of education on beer.
More than education.
Yeah,
he has been giving us
I've been giving beer. You schooling.
He bought much beer in here. And if you're in the same boat as like Wayne or Pat that really don't like bitter, or me who kind of doesn't like bitter, we found something two things that will
there
work.
There are beers out there for you.
We found two that at least Wayne and Pat wasn't there for either of these because he was in speech therapy. But there are two of us that were...
Wow.
He's learning how to talk.
Uh-huh.
See, Pat, this is the part where you're supposed to lash out. That's what banter is.
Just
he makes
say,
a track at you, you go back.
You just
track
at him and it's on the podcast.
I'll take it out of Dan's ass later. You don't have to worry about that.
But there were the two things. We found two beers that worked really well.
I found way more than two beers.
One of them was just real quick. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this.
New Glarus Belgian Red, which is a cherry ale from New Glarus Brewing Company in Wisconsin. And you can only buy it within Wisconsin. Both of these are from New Glarus. And the other one was New Glarus Raspberry Tart.
No, actually, the other one I was going to give was Schlafly.
Schlafly's number 15.
Oh, Schlafly as a Dunkelweiss.
Which is a local one.
Excuse me. I'm the one who suggested that to you guys.
You did. It was an excellent suggestion.
But you weren't there when I ordered
it. Screw you.
Somebody could have called in and come to lunch with us today.
Yeah, I almost did, actually.
You have 120 sick days. I'm sorry. I have no... You could take a third of a year off. You could just be for 4 months, 5 months, I guess.
You were the never caller inner of Deerberg. Yeah. I remember that.
I've got this work ethic thing, man. I got to be dying not to come in.
Look, it is an American neurosis. We live to work. We do not work to live. Oh, but that's a different tire.
You know what, though? Wayne's the workaholic.
Oh, yeah.
Wayne is the hard worker in our group.
So real quick, before we get back to role-playing.
Real quick, though, I got to say... Mad props, Mikey. You introduced me to the beer.
There will be more come Fear the Con 3 or if I come back before then for some reason.
I have drank more beer in the last 2 days hanging out with you, Mikey, than I have.
I just want you to say...
Probably in the last couple of years.
On the air. I just want you to say it flat out and completely
Mikey,
admit it.
You found a beer that I like.
Thank you.
Awesome. So, Mikey, you introduced me to Dark Lord Ale.
I can't say that yet.
Now so I've got to kill people.
You really should have been here.
Pat's your dumb badge who didn't come with us. Mm-hmm. But
And you introduced me to this old chub that I really like. And his name's Chad. Pat.
That's right.
Chad's, no, it's old. His name's
Chad's
Pat.
Fondling and sucking on my old chub tonight.
All right, so what is the URL podcast?
Goodbeershow.com.
Goodbeershow.com. We'll put that in the show notes. All right, back to role-playing games.
It's also on Beer Safari. It's a jungle of beer out there. Okay.
You know, I was about to say that I was going to actually start listening to this.
And now,
No.
Chad, you're missing out on something, too.
What's that?
We saw Mikey in a furry costume today.
What? I was all furried out today.
This is a story we have to tell.
Oh, my God.
This is a good one. So we were trying to kill some time because we did lunch at Schlafly's, which is a microbrew with a restaurant. And we had some time to kill between that and the recording. And so we went to a local gaming store, didn't pick up much of anything. I picked up a copy of Heavy Metal just because I think it's a great way to get a variety of art and writing styles in one magazine.
And boobs.
While we were out, we had a little bit of time to kill, so we went by the Missouri History Museum, which, truth be told, is a really small and really crappy museum.
But I like it.
Well, but it was
raining. Dude, it has an Iron Cross from Hermann Göring. Did you see the Nazi cross?
Yeah.
It's under a blanket.
One that was given to Lindbergh,
Yeah. But it's, the really good stuff to see here, like the zoo, was raining, so we didn't go to. While we're in the gift shop, we found something.
You didn't go to the art museum?
Just let me finish the story.
No.
While we're in the gift shop, I walk around a corner, and Mikey is wearing, I didn't even recognize him before, he's wearing a little thing, it's kind of like a mask, but it really doesn't cover your whole face, it's kind of like a headband that has horse ears, a horse snout over his nose, and if you bop the horse snout, it neighs.
Yeah.
Take that wherever you please. But getting back to role-playing games. All right, so the one thing I really want to talk about, well, we've got Mikey here, and also Pat's got some experience.
You don't remember
this.
His name?
Well, no, I was trying to think of Paul's experience. I was trying to remember Paul's experience with this. I'm going to have to do a quick poll here.
Yes.
Theater. Who here has experience with theater? Chad, I know you do. Pat does. Wayne does.
No.
There you go. I'm just trying to remember.
Look, my middle name is Wayne. Let's go.
Okay. The other, okay.
Mikey, is it really Wayne?
Yes.
Mikey Wayne Mason is what I meant. All right, so we've got three people here.
That sounds so like a pedophile.
Sounds like an assassin.
Or
a pedophilic assassin. Okay.
So we got three guys here who have experience with theater. And one of the things that was getting discussed on our forums that I would love to develop more fully is within improv theater, there are certain exercises and techniques that people use to help build a scene or act out a character.
It's called cocaine.
Now, within a role-playing game, obviously you're building scenes and acting out characters. Even in the most hack-and-slash game, there is some level of theater to it. And obviously all the way up to the far side where you have these story games that are nothing but theater, and then all points
between. You know, there's a guy on the forums who says he plays a hack-and-slash game. He doesn't think he's named a character in the past 10 years.
Yeah, I read that.
What techniques from theater can you suggest that would work in role-playing games?
Okay.
What techniques can you think of that would not work and ought to be avoided in role-playing games, and why?
Improvisational theater is built entirely upon group trust. So if your group doesn't trust each other, if the game master doesn't trust the players don't trust the GM, you're screwed. All right, if you're going to bring improvisational techniques in. Now, the main concept when you're doing improv, you're given a general set of rules and guidelines. Sometimes these come out sort of a game, and so you get the whose line is it anyway, where you have to play standing, sitting, lying down, or whatever. And the rule is somebody has to be standing, somebody has to be sitting, somebody has to be lying down during the scene. You have to justify it in some way, shape, or form every time it happens. But the general rule in improvisation is the yes and rule. And this came up on the forums, which is whenever anyone says anything within the context of the improvisation, instead of saying no or but, you say yes or and. Whatever they just said, whatever they did, it's accepted as real and contradicted. You don't say, no, you're crazy. No. It's yes and. You know, when somebody says the reindeer just mauled my dog, yes, and the dog's eating its leg or whatever. You know, lame examples. That doesn't work within the context of a role-playing game in general, because the purpose of yes and is to build a world. And within the context of a role-playing game, the GM and hopefully the game system and or the players who are going to play in it have already sat down and decided what the game world should be before they started. That should be a generally accepted guideline. where acting really intersects with role-playing, well, there are a couple ways. One, as a GM, being able to improvise on your feet to pull out a new situation to react to the way characters do. The yes and really applies there, because if your PCs are doing something that you totally didn't expect, your instinct is they're trying to kill my game, no but. I mean, and we've all experienced this if we've GM'd. It's the no, but, you know, or you're caught off guard. And if you get used to the yes and, then you can use their input unless they're just being total goof
right.
retards to build a game out of it. Now, as a player...
I really like that concept. I had never heard of these yes ands, no but concept. That is
yes
really
and builds up, yeah. no but yeah. tears down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the important thing is if you want to keep going, you can't ever contradict the person before you.
Right. And the difference is within a role-playing game, you have a game master who really, if he or she chooses to do this, mm-hmm. has some kind of ultimate veto authority. They can say, no, that's not how it works. That's not what happened. And maybe they're saying that because that's the established agreed upon setting. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're saying that because it's their job. They are the world.
Yeah. Well, yeah. In role-playing games, we split the baby in half. We have the players saying, this is what I try to do. This is the motion my character takes. Mm-hmm. And then the GM says, all right, this is what happens.
I think the GM is the arbiter. He is the one who decides, this is what my character is trying to do. Yes, and... No, but... And you're absolutely right. I think that the human response to that, your just knee-jerk response is... No, but.
Yeah, you're trying to break my game.
Yeah, because no, I have, it's my game. Because we've established on the show the reason why people are GMs is because they're control freaks.
You know, the yes and would be particularly useful in one of those past the GM games.
I was
games.
Thinking the exact same
but
thing.
But every, you know, what I have said in my week, you have to just take.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes,
that and. All just happened.
And.
I think the no, but, though, in some cases has to occur.
It does.
But
it does.
To keep, because that's part of the GM's job. Yeah. But I think in some situations, you could have a lot of fun as a game master. If a player says something out of left field, mm-hmm. you go with it. One of the things that we used to do in our old gaming groups was if Chad's character is talking to an NPC, and I'm game mastering, but there's some other guys around. You know, he's mm-hmm. in a marketplace, and he's talking to me, and I'm role-playing with him, we would have the other guys that weren't part of that scene play an NPC. It'd just be like, Wayne, you're going to be the guy who's going to try and distract him, or Pat, you're going to be a pickpocket, or what, I don't know. What it just depended on the scene. And whatever they did, the game master just kind of roll with, in good faith, that they would attempt mm-hmm. to play that NPC.
It's all about trust.
Yeah, it's all
it is
about
very
trust.
Much about trust. Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the pinnacle of gaming right there. When you have a game master running a game, you have a player in a scene, the sort of spotlight is on him, and that the game master has NPCs that the other players, he doesn't even assign them. It's just a given that the other players pick up the NPCs and the other players play those NPCs. Not necessarily in a mechanical, oh, we're having a shootout, I roll the dice way, but in a role play sort of way.
And that is very much like improvisational theater, where someone might shift from character to character, and it's surely defined by their voice, mannerisms, mm-hmm. act, whatever.
It's good for those people because they don't get just sit around getting bored.
I've actually participated in that a couple times where I picked up, like you're saying, Dan, and actually played an NPC with just a few basic rules. And like you say, Mike, that is the epitome of the improvisational theater. From what you have pointed out there, I think that the improvisational acting is a great tool or great thing for your GM, and also if you're playing these NPC type of things. I don't, however, think that it is as good for the player characters. For me, playing a character, I'm not doing improv. For me, it's more of a role as opposed to I'm trying to react on what's going on.
Right, I can see that.
But I think it suits, like you're saying, the GM. I think it's to a T, because just like you said, you're trying to create a world.
Yeah, the players in a theater scene, everybody in the scene is contributing to creating the world around them, to shaping everything.
Right.
And within the confines of a game, the player's accepted job is not to create the world, but merely to interact with the world. Mm-hmm. That is presented by the GM, and it does require a level of trust. It also, one of the things that I've seen in games that I absolutely hate is when a player... not a character, but a player, will say something like, well, I pull my gun and shoot him in the head, and they roll their dice.
Yeah.
And when I'm GMing, that doesn't fly.
Yeah.
No, you pull your gun and try to shoot him in the head, and when I say you can roll, you can roll.
Mm-hmm.
Because I rolled a 20, I swear before all that is holy, or whatever.
Yeah. The dice are there, the number's there. That's it's, right. It's like this.
That's great, but you're at a negative 400 modifier for being a dick.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it comes from this attitude that the mechanics, you know, define the game instead of the game defining the mechanics.
But and as a game master, if a player genuinely wants to pull a gun and shoot the NPCs in the head, I'm fine with that. It requires the trust that they not just immediately just roll. Yeah. If they do, they're going to re-roll. But that's beside the point. The thing I really wanted to get at, when you're talking, it isn't necessarily an improvisational thing. And Chad, you brought it up earlier. There are two things that every character in a play, and I'm talking about scripted theater, actors are often required to do by directors, is to break a scene down into beats. And every beat will have its own motivation. What is my character trying to do here? It's motivation.
What does that mean? What does it mean to break a scene down into beats?
It's like breaking into segments.
Okay.
Partitions where they're trying to do different things. Anytime their motivation shifts, that's a different beat.
Okay, so any change in the course of action. Right. So I walk into a restaurant, that's a beat. The waitress approaches me to seat me, that's a beat. I don't want the table she's offering me, that's a third beat. Is that about right?
So you're having a conversation with somebody. At one point in the conversation, the dynamic shifts, okay? Two guys are talking, and one guy says, "How are you doing today?" The other one says, "Not so well, my dog died." That would be one beat. As the next beat, he doesn't want to talk about why his dog died or anything like that. He's trying to cover it up. He's opening up, he's covering up. That's a motivation.
Hey, Mikey, so I'm comparing this to, like, rounds in combat. Is that a fair comparison?
Fair, yes. Pretty fair.
Okay. All right, so go on. So you... Okay.
All right. Well, as a character, you're not going to break a game down into beats, and you shouldn't. You really shouldn't. But I think every player character should have two things for their character, and this will help above all else. And strangely enough, I got this from Paranoia, the role-playing game. All right? Because in Paranoia, the role-playing game, first, it's illegal to have a mutant power. Mm-hmm. It's a criminal offense, and you will be summarily executed for it. And second, it's also a criminal offense to belong to a secret society. And every character in Paranoia has both of those.
Yeah.
A mutant power and belongs to a secret society. And every game, your secret society gives you a different job to do, right? And every mission, mm-hmm. you're given a different job or task by your secret society, something you're supposed to do. And you have the overriding agenda. But I think every player or every character needs a motivation and an agenda. And your agenda is your long-term goal. Why are you there? And every gaming session, you may need a different motivation, all right, or short-term goal. I mean, and you want to add interest to a role-playing game, make sure that every player character has a measurable agenda and motivation, and don't let any of the other characters know. And that's, you know, one way to make it a really dynamic thing. You're going to have notes flying.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to trust each other, mm-hmm. but you're going to have notes flying. It's going to be awesome.
That's a game I love.
Yeah. I love notes in games.
Well, hey, let me just speak to my taste in gaming and also ask you a question. I think this would be a great thing, provided the agenda was not internally, utterly destructive. You know, your agenda is to blow the other guy out the air.
Depends on the group.
I said my taste in gaming, yeah. So I preface it that way.
As long as it's not game-ending.
Well, here's my question, though. You started off by saying most of these things require trust within the group.
Right.
And now you've gone to, let's do something to absolutely annihilate that trust.
No. That's a difference.
You have
between,
to trust each other as players to make a good game. Your characters don't have to trust each other.
Yeah, I think that there's a definite difference between players trusting each other and characters not trusting each other.
Right.
I think
for people
like me,
there has
to be that disconnect.
Yeah, and I think for someone like me, and I'm fully admitting this is a me thing, and I think there are going to be people.
Can you look across the table and say, "Oh my God, John, your character just totally screwed mine over"? High five.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be honest. For me, and I know I'm not alone because I've gamed with people like this, Mike, not Mikey, but Mike, our previous host, being another example, who would have trouble building that disconnect.
I guess it's part of you know, you talk about building a group template for your gaming party, but you don't talk about building a group template for your gaming group. Yeah. And your gaming group has to be people who mesh, and you have to agree on what kind of a game you're going to run and what the general rules and policies are. And if somebody cannot divorce themselves from in-character knowledge and out-of-character knowledge, then this will never work. Because when I see Wayne pass a note to Dan and Dan's the GM, the first thought in my head is, how is he trying to screw me?
I'll tell you how I've got around that my whole life.
My character would never know that he's passing a note.
Be the loser.
Be the loser.
Be the guy who gets shot in the head, and the people who can't disconnect it are fine. And you've had your fun.
Yeah. That's fine. Well, and one of the, or just as an example, one of the campaigns that I've played in, my character's agenda, all right, the group's agenda, or the group's, the task was to go assassinate an overlord. And I was tasked by an outside party, and I hooked up with the group in the middle of their mission. My job was to stop them from killing the overlord. That was my job. And I ended up having to be the loser because when all of my attempts failed and they got to the overlord, I switched sides and I was fighting with him against them and I died.
Yeah.
There you go.
And I had to be willing to accept that if I was going to follow through with my agenda.
It probably made you the star PC of the game, didn't it?
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know.
People always say
that I have interesting characters, and it's not that you have an interesting character per se, because every character can be interesting. Mm-hmm. Give yourself a motivation and an agenda, and they can sometimes work against each other.
And I have to say that in that case, where it's one person, the big reveal, they turn against the party, I think 99.99% of the time, that person needs to lose. If the one person turns against the party and, ha ha ha, I've been evil all along and this has been the grand scheme, and everyone's like, oh my god, that's awesome, that's so cool, and then the person proceeds to kill every one of the players, I think that there's sort of a lame thing. It's not necessarily a hard feeling thing.
I think we've had this discussion before, wherein if they take the microchip and blow up the nuke and that's it, that's lame.
Yeah.
But if you've been sowing the seeds of love for the last 3 months.
The Transformers game where you're supposed to steal the MacGuffin.
Yeah. That was the discussion.
Yeah. And it's like the one guy, it's like, oh, by the way, guys, fellow Autobots, I've been a Decepticon the whole time and I'm holding the chip. I turn into an airplane and fly off, and everyone's like,
That is dumb. If you've been subtly working against them for a long time and there have been clues and it fits into the plot perfectly, then it's cool.
I think if we were to chase this too far, we'd end up on a pretty long tangent.
Well, we've had an episode about this. Yeah, Chad and I are rehashing things we've talked about two months ago.
Keep going, Mikey. What are some other things, or Pat or Chad or anyone who's been involved in theater, what are some other theater things that you think do and do not work in role-playing games? What are some
of scripting? I'll say definitely scripting. And this sounds strange. You know, it's like, oh, well, role-playing games aren't scripted. The Game Master's notes, but as a player, I don't pre-do anything. No, sometimes you, like, an example.
We tried.
Wayne and I tried. There was a situation between two of our characters in a game, and our characters didn't get along, and we had this idea. It's like, wow, wouldn't it be cool if our characters suddenly got along for ABC reason?
Yeah, we were excited all week about it. We talked back and forth.
Talked it up. This situation, that situation. Wouldn't it be cool?
If I said this, you'd say that, and that's perfect.
Yeah, and the whole thing would gel together. It'd be like
sounds like cheating.
You got your chocolate in my peanut butter.
Yeah,
you got your peanut butter in my chocolate.
And you know that was actually the kind of serendipity. It's like, wow, this is going to be so cool. Well, on the day it came down, it was, instead of this being this cool interaction of these dominoes falling like we had planned it, it was like, hey,
how's it going?
Hi.
Yeah.
Not an actual actor. Wow.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
And see, that kind of takes takes it to the opposite extreme where, you know, what I was saying earlier about sort of the improv. It's like, as a player character, you're not necessarily improvising, but at the same time, you're not just sitting down to a scripted out thing of what it is. It's just, it has to be sort of a natural thing. It has to flow. Like you say, for the people around the table, the non-GM, we all just sort of react to what happens in the moment. And that's life happening now, and you build on it. You can't say
you can't be plan spontaneous.
It. You can't, exactly.
That's why we shut each other up when we're having dinner and we stumble across a topic.
Yeah.
Right.
We can't do it again on the mics. Yeah. It's like forcing yourself to pee.
In this game, Sir Chas, sorry, my parents, as soon as we were done, we both just were sitting there quiet. We look over each other, and I'm like, that was awkward.
Yeah, that was awkward. Yeah. It was lame.
Let's not do that again.
Well, and the thing is that you've got a group of people, and the vast majority of gaming groups in the world are not made up of actors. Mm-hmm. And even if they are, they're not made up of actors who are good at improvisation. Because I'll tell you, most of the people who do improvisation shouldn't. I mean, really, honestly, and that's a personal opinion, and it's not Mikey at Fear the Boot. It's Mikey. It's Mikey at MikeyMason.com.
You said it on Fear the Boot. It's on the internet. It's fact.
And it's all of our opinion.
Yeah.
It's fact.
You can contact Mikey at noreply@feartheboot.com.
There you go.
In other words, Dan at feartheboot.com.
But no, noreply is a real address. It doesn't go to me.
The point is that a role-playing game, I mean, it's not a play.
Yeah.
You're not in character the whole time. It's designed that you're not in character the whole time. Can you do that? Yes. I imagine you could with a group of people who are really dedicated to doing the role play thing. They could say nothing that was out of character. I guess it would be incredibly... you couldn't do it. Never mind. I changed my mind. But
you know, actually, I'll have to say that I have gotten to a point in gaming where... It has been that. It has been, like, long stretches of in-characterness.
But even then, you break it to
not,
say...
Yeah, it's
you
not
say,
sustainable.
I put the coin in my pocket.
Right, it's not sustainable.
And I pick
sustainable.
Up this little ball and throw it, and right. There's a number on... I mean, you can't
I think
you can't
that,
marry that.
I mean, maybe in a like, a LARP where there's, like, no combat, Yeah, you have to break character. It's not about, even whether you're ultra crunch or no rules and diceless, I do think you have to break character.
Unless your character has got a quirk of self-narration.
Dan, we're starting a new game. I'm taking a flaw. I just want you to know.
I'm sorry, Dan. I'm sorry.
We've got at least two things planned for it. She has quirk of self-narration, and the armed guards chasing you around going, oi, 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 oi.
Awesome. That is full of win.
That's but right. there are times, I mean, and you can look at theater, and whether you consider film theater or not, there are lots of improvised films, and a lot of them star Michael McKean and Christopher Guest and Harry Shearer. The most famous, and possibly even in my opinion, the best would be This Is Spinal Tap, which was not scripted.
Mm-hmm.
They came up with ideas for what would happen during a scene. They talked with each other and with Rob Reiner about it, and the only thing that was really written in that movie was the music.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, everything was an idea. You know, the scripted parts were when they were on stage and stupid stuff happened. They had to do that in order to make sure that everybody was okay. But other than that, it was improvised for the vast majority of the film. They talked with the director, who would be the equivalent of the GM, and said, this is what we think should happen. And they would come up with an agenda for their characters, and then they would play it out.
I think that what I brought from theater to the gaming table is something much more general, in the sense that I'm more comfortable, say, talking in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
Say you're interacting with one of the NPCs or the GM, and you're doing it in character, as opposed to the, oh, my guy's going to go over there and do that. It's if you're acting something out, like, I don't have sort of the stage fright. And I think a lot of people maybe do. You know, they're somewhat uncomfortable at first, or they're really shy about it. For me, it was really never an issue, just because I was used to standing up in front of hundreds of people and performing.
Do you guys ever run into anybody in your gaming groups that had stage fright? That, like, you know, it's everybody's acting their character out, but they just couldn't.
I can think of one or two of our mutual acquaintances that, undiagnosed case.
Yeah.
And almost every new player, the moment you throw them in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is it... Part of it is just that lack of trust. I mean, when you work with a cast for any period of time, all right, you're going to have that. I mean, you're going to have separate factions within a cast anyway. But, you know, whoever the protagonist is and the antagonist, when they're on stage, they're the protagonist and the antagonist. But when they're backstage and they're out of character, they're not against each other.
Right.
And you can have two characters in a stage play or in an improvisation who hate each other. Mm-hmm. But the actors or the players of those characters don't.
Yeah.
And so you can have that conflict and make it work within a role-playing
game. That's why I think that you can have that sort of conflict we were talking about a couple of points earlier, of the characters do things that, as long as it's not breaking the game and destroying the group, you can have mistrust between the characters.
Well, I'm almost not having fun unless that's going
yeah,
hard.
Yeah, and I think they're that internal tension... External tension is great, and internal tension is great. It's just levels of the two.
Well, absolutely. The only thing I was suggesting is that I be careful of the individual and the group tolerances for how far that's going to go.
You know, I have a story, too, where I was running a game for my old group that you were in, John, and it was the Seasons campaign that used to go on and on about. Where
crashed because of this.
Yeah. And one player, one actual person, didn't like the fact that there was sort of the backstabbing going on and that there was player death. Or character, not player death. There was player
death. We were seriously into this game. Awesome. Your character died.
Blackleaf, no!
That your character died. Here's the knife.
Fortunately, we never let Alexander play with us, or else it would have been.
You guys were never on my level. So, yeah, and there was one player who didn't like that we were doing character death, because that was actually kind of a new concept that we were introducing. And when some player machinations caused her character to die.
No, they weren't machinations. They were, she shot me twice and missed both times, then I killed her.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, that
sorry,
was,
baby.
That was the whole thing, is that she was totally all right with killing John's character.
Yeah.
But when it came time for her character to die because she screwed up, that was unacceptable. And it's her
fault for not hitting.
Yeah. Well, and we argued about this. We debated it. We debate all the points that we're debating here about this and more were debated for like an hour. I actually had a notebook. You know, I say I'm no-note GM, but that has changed over time. And I actually had a notebook with my adventure in it. And I was just like, fine, you're alive. And I took my notebook and I threw it across the room in anger and just hit the wall and slid down. And I'm like, okay, let's keep going.
And she stormed out, and that was the last game campaign.
You know, honestly, I'd use this as an object lesson of why I think you need to be careful about.
Well, you got to know your players. Did.
Yeah,
you got to
create a group template for your players.
Let me put something out here, and I'm going to tie this right back to the theater thing, which is why I'm going to chase this, because I wasn't going to. It seemed like a tangent, but I think it is relevant. Which is, if right now one of you guys was to walk downstairs with a hammer and take it to my car. Mm-hmm. I would obviously not be happy. Why? Because you have destroyed something tangible of mine that you had no right to do. Pat, there's no hammer in the room. sorry.
Screwdriver.
That's true. Oh, yeah. Oh, wait a minute.
Right.
This mic stand's kind of heavy, though.
There's an AK-47 somewhere. I mean, that would get hard on.
Use the dog.
The hammer's not my fist.
Let's say at the same time, in a role-playing game, your character, without really good motivation, this is not an act of self-defense, your agenda, for some reason, requires blowing my character out of an airlock.
Hey, John.
The character the character that I have written for...
We were never PCs together, though, so that never happened.
I know.
But the character I've written for, I've put heart and soul into, I put backstory into, I've tried to develop, I've got plans for this guy.
Wimp.
Well, in many ways, it feels like the same thing, that you have destroyed something tangible of mine without sufficient cause. Now, the difference where I think...
Oh, there was cause in this case.
Well, I know there was in that case, but I'm saying there's not in every case.
Sure.
Where I think this diverges from acting is in acting, the character you're playing is not yours. The story is not yours. You know from the start, Dracula's going to get the stake through his heart. That's the way the story's supposed to end.
In improv, that's not the case.
No, in improv, that may not be the case, but you also said that in improv, if I'm following you right...
You create the world together.
You create the world together. I'm not allowed to tell you no. I'm not allowed to say, sitting, standing, lying, you're dead and stay dead.
Right.
You know, that's not an acceptable action within that.
Right.
And so...
Well, it is, but it'll be the last action of the evening.
Well, yeah, it'll be the last action of the evening, unless you're trying to end that skit, I guess. But
zombies! And you're standing.
But, you know, my point being, that's, I think, why, for me, it crosses that line, because you have taken something tangible from me. And in theater, scripted theater... That's not occurring because it was never yours to begin with.
Do you want to know why that whole thing failed? And that season game, and I threw my notebook and I got frustrated and we argued for an hour about it. Because going into the game, this is a point that Mikey has been making all night. Going into the game, it was a basic fantasy game where the only weird thing about it was... We are the owners of a keep at a crossroads where we collect taxes. And we're not an adventurer group that goes out to someplace adventurous. The whole story and adventure takes place in the keep. And that was the only thing. That was it.
It was a DS9 take on TNG genre.
And the whole, there was none of the player backs. It was just, we're just running straight fantasy. And just through whatever, it became that. It evolved into that. And there was never an understanding. There was never an understanding at the outset to say, it's going to be A, B, and C, guys. We're going to have player death. We're going to have characters who have their own agendas and have their own motivations. These agendas and these motivations are going to cut cross purposes, but there's going to be an overarching plot that needs to be moved forward so that you've got to do this balance between keeping the group together while twisting the knife at the same time. And, you know, it's like a video game. You start setting all these sliders and levels and numbers. None of that was done, and that's why it failed.
But even when you make that accommodation, there's only so much you can go.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
you can't say, this is 1500 Europe, and I hate Christian characters, and I'm going to kill any Christian I find.
Yeah.
Because that's what she did.
That just didn't work.
She had to run off into the woods.
That goes back to group template.
Yeah.
But when you play a game, you have to accept that you're bound by whatever the rule system is. And you're bound, if you're allowed to control your character, they're allowed to control their character. Yeah. And part of it is, if everybody knows that agendas can cross, that paths can cross, motivations can come counter to each other, and that even animosity is allowed, that's something that needs to be said outright at the outset of the game. Otherwise, you do feel unfairly wronged
that
somebody
lesson.
Stole your character. And the one thing that you're allowed to create in this world was taken. So, you know, it's totally unfair, and it is unfair.
It can be unfair.
But if you're playing a game, things shouldn't be unfair. Right? But if you have agreed that other players can do that when you set out, and this is it's part of the, you know, you in improvisation, you agree to a set, whatever the set of rules is before the improv starts. And sometimes that the set of rules is simply nothing but yes and.
One of the things I'd caution against, though, is if you're dealing with a situation where you're setting up the characters mistrusting each other, that can be a lot of fun if everyone in the group is mistrusting each other. But if it's only one person that's being mistrusted, that person before too long could end up feeling segregated, lose interest in their character. Some people may thrive on it and love it, but others, it can kill a character for them. And I've seen that happen.
And that is what goes back to the GM's part is kind of role in that. It would be kind of a mediator. They examine and approve agendas and motivations at the start of the game. Your motivation is going to change, but your character's long-term agenda probably isn't.
Yeah, and that's something I'm cautioning GMs about because in this case I'm thinking of, that's kind of what happened. It was something given to that player.
And that can be dangerous to a game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could pull the game's disc, or it could, like, tear the game's rotator.
If it works well, though, it can be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Maybe just a case of the
shins. If everything falls into place and that big reveal happens, though, that is a fun moment.
And it is. It can be.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've never had a successful paranoia game because I was never able...
Because you're never supposed to.
No, well, I mean, by successful, I meant where everybody went laser happy, fun, Duke Nukem kill whoever, whatever, you know? Because I've always been with such serious role-playing groups, and they just could not grasp the concept of having six clones, and it's okay to shoot the other players. And it's okay to be shot, and it's not personal.
I've always wanted to run a paranoia game, and all the groups that I've had over the years, it's the exact same thing. It's either very serious role players, like who are, you know, they really want to get deep into character, which is not paranoia, or they want to, you know, they don't want a comedy game, or they do want comedy games and that tension where it's just like, okay, John is wearing orange and John's wearing red and he's standing on an orange tile in the break area and I zap him. And then, you know, it's like, why did you do that? We're supposed to be working together. I've never been able to get that mix, but I have been able to play at it in a con, because in a con, you don't know the other
perfect for
the table.
A con game.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are some guy, you know, they've been to you all the con and you just want to shoot them.
That's right.
Six times.
The challenge is finding a good enough reason to just barely.
Since I've played in a con game with you, Mikey, I hope that's not directed at me.
No.
No joking. What con game did you guys play in?
Dance Transformers.
Transformers, that's right.
My one game at FearTheCon 2 that went really well, the first run of the Transformers game.
You know what?
That was quite a lineup if you look at the people, too. My wife was in there, Mikey, me, Chris, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name.
Mace. Chris Mace, the dude who was on the forums, he's Omajo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah,
he was our New York guy.
It was quite a lineup of the game, and I think that's one of the reasons why it was so much fun, is we had a great group of people, and almost immediately, the notes were flying. Yeah. There were factions within the groups, and Chris and I both had the... Basically, we weren't Autobots, we weren't Decepticons, we were both kind of that...
playing both sides of the fence.
I gotta tell you, man, there's a couple of people who maybe emailed me or sent me a PM or talked to me, just a couple, who are like, Dan's running a homebrew Transformers game, it sounds interesting, should I sign up for this?
Yes, yes, you should.
And I was like, do you understand that this is a game that I played when I was a teenager, and I love it. And every time that Dan is in a group that I'm in, that we are trying to decide what game to play, I put Transformers on the table each time because this game is awesome.
So, Dan, are you running Transformers at Fear the Con?
I don't know. I haven't decided.
The answer is yes.
All right, because we're putting the pressure on you now. It's got to be
at least
good.
One, but I don't know. It depends, because if I get some of my other stuff further along, I'd like to also start doing some more Danverse stuff, and I don't know at this point.
Is there going
to
be a Mikey Mason game at Fear the Con?
I am going to run at least one game, and right now I'm... I'm heavily considering Paranoia setting game.
Oh, dude, you run that, I'll sit in.
And the other thing that
I'm
really considering is the West End Games Ghostbusters. Not a Savage Ghostbusters, but the original rules West End Games cinematic Ghostbusters.
Oh, I've got chills.
Well, you know what? I guess we're going to end on those chills.
Chill, you got chill.
Yes.
I got chill. Multiplying.
It took me the longest time to realize that she wasn't saying Jews. It sounds like Jews.
I got Jews. Multiplying.
It's about
the losing control.
Changing in central and in the Midwest.
I'll defuse. He's a flying. He's electrifying.
Wow. I take it back. It was he. It was Travolta at that point. But I seriously thought that was the lyric. So sorry, Daniel Perez.
To better shape up.
And to all the Jews on the air. I don't feel that way. But that's what I thought.
Once my
the
heart
lyric
is
was.
Set on you.
My question is, will this make it into the final cut? I'm hoping that's a yes.
Don't forget to check the show notes for Mikey Mason stuff, for the Fear the Fruit stuff, for all the good stuff we always link out there. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Thanks for having me.
See ya!
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.